Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go.
Welcome to Saturday Frights, the podcast. I am your co-host, the projectionist. And now, for your host, Vic Sage.
Thank you, projectionist. And thank you, friends, for joining us once again for Saturday Frights, the podcast. This week, my co-host and I are going to be discussing the American International Pictures 1971 classic, The Abominable Dr. Fibes. First of all, though, I'd like to welcome back my friend and co-host, the projectionist. The Retro's fault was a little lonely without you, man.
Thank you, Sage.
You said on the tape recording last week to our listeners that you were meeting some old friends in Haddonfield. How did that go?
Oh, very well. I was able to drop in on some colleagues in Haddonfield. Our film collection has grown substantially as a result. Why, I was even able to pick up some of my old journals.
You had a double feature at the Haunted Drive-In, didn't you? That go okay?
Yes. We had a surprising number of brave souls attend the showing.
Well, like I said, it's really good to have you back on the podcast, my friend. I also think you chose a wonderful movie this week to talk about. Certainly one of my favorite Vincent Price films of all time. I believe you have the trailer threaded up, don't you?
Certainly.
What lovely music for a murder, or two, or three, or nine. Who's this? Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet a dear friend. Nine killed you. Nine shall die.
Your wife, no Fibes. But you I will kill.
But you can't, Doctor. I am already dead.
Here, how are we going to get him off this? You take his head, and I'll take his feet. Let's unscrew him.
Dr. Fibes, who samples the finer things of life in his own inimitable way.
There's boils of bats.
Frogs?
Frogs, yes. And there's of blood.
Curse of hail in the bloody middle of nowhere.
Are you ready for Dr. Fibes?
The Abominable Dr. Fibes is a story of one mad genius's diabolical plans of revenge on the nine doctors he holds responsible for his wife's death. Well, eight doctors actually, and the head nurse that was attending during the operation.
You say revenge, Sage. I would counter and say that poor Fibes is obtaining justice against the incompetent Dr. Vesalius and his medical cronies.
I'm sure you would say that, projectionist, but I think our listeners will agree that no matter how charismatic Vincent Price is as Dr. Anton Fibes, and I might add it's a mostly non-speaking role, he is the villain of the film. Dr. Vesalius, by the way, is played by Joseph Cotten, but we'll get to his part in the story a bit later.
A matter of perspective, I suppose, Victor. Though you should clarify that Price speaks throughout the entire film, you just don't see his lips move.
You're right. So let's get into more detail about Fibes. We learn in the film that Dr. Anton Fibes is something of a Renaissance man. He's an inventor, scientist, musician, and biblical scholar of great renown. When he learned of his wife's operation, he was rushing to the hospital to be at her side when he lost control of his car. That car burst into flames, and he is presumed dead by the police and world at large.
That is far from the truth, though.
Indeed. Dr. Fibes is most certainly alive, though horribly disfigured. We don't actually get to see how bad it is until near the end of the movie. My co-host is quite correct in that you do hear Price throughout the film. You just don't see his mouth move while he's on screen. Fives speaks by connecting a cable to the side of his neck to various pieces of machinery to give himself a voice. And Price does a wonderful bit of acting here. We can see his throat is moving while he is talking, even though, of course, his voice was added after the shooting was complete. As you heard from the trailer, he's also quite an accomplished organist, as when we first meet our main protagonist, he is rising up from the floor, becloaked in a black robe and hood, playing War March of the Priests. Though Fibes has lost his wife, Victoria Regina Fibes, played in an uncredited role by frequent Hammer film actress Carolyn Monroe, he is not alone in his mansion, as he does have the company of his mechanical creations, known as Dr. Fibes' Clockwork Wizards. Basically a large-scale version of a wind-up toy band.
They certainly play beautiful music.
Agreed. Fibes also has help in carrying out his revenge scheme, thanks to his assistant, I guess you would call her, the beautiful but mute Volnavia, who's played by Virginia North. It's never explained how the two hooked up together, but Volnavia certainly is more than happy to aid in punishing the targets of Fibes.
That punishment is styled in the form of the 10 plagues of Egypt from the Old Testament. Though Anton sometimes has to work with what he has.
True, but let's tell the listeners what the plagues are, Projectionist.
Of course. There is the plague of boils, bats, frogs, blood, hail, rats, beasts, locusts, death of the firstborn, and then that of darkness.
Once a revenge scheme or plague has been carried out, Fibes places an amulet around the neck of a wax bust that resembles the victim, and then takes a blowtorch and melts the face away until it's a gaping black maw. We should also let you know, listeners, that while this is indeed a horror film, especially with the outcome of those plagues, this movie is filled with wickedly dark humor. For example, and you heard it a bit in the trailer, actually, but when Dr. Whitcomb is killed, he's impaled by a brass unicorn head, representing the plague of beasts. The unicorn is launched through the doors opened by the police inspectors, who have in fact come to put him in protective custody. There is humor right there, of course, that inadvertently the inspectors helped Fibes by opening the doors, but after the fact, they are trying to find a way to remove the corpse. The unicorn's horn pinned poor Dr. Whitcomb's body to the wall, but that horn is threaded. So the police begin to turn Dr. Whitcomb's body counterclockwise so that it unscrews from the wall.
My personal favorite involves the plague of frogs and Dr. Hargraves. He is attending a masquerade ball, and Fibes is on hand to present him a very special mask. A gilded frog's head that, once he places it over his head, is latched close by Fibes, and with each passing second, ratchets tighter and tighter until his head is crushed within.
That may be your personal favorite, but I always thought that was the most horrifying. He has this mask crushing his head, and all of the partygoers are unable to hear his cries for help due to loud music.
That music is, in fact, the Dark Town Strutter's Ball, Sage. A very wonderful bit of Dixieland jazz, written by Shelton Brooks in 1917.
I'll be down to get you in a taxi, honey. You better be ready about a 8:30. Now, baby, don't be late. I want to be there when the band starts playing. Remember, when we get there, honey, the two steps, I'm going to have them all. I'm going to dance off both my shoes when they play the Jelly Roll Blues tomorrow night at the Dark Town Strutter's Ball.
I didn't know that, Projectionist. I just assumed it was written for the movie by the film's composer, Basil Kirchin.
You know what they say when you assume. The singer of the Dark Town Strutter's Ball that is used in the film, Victor, is Paul Frees.
Wow. Projectionist, it does sound like him now that you point it out. So listeners, the legendary voice of Boris Badenoff in the Rocky and Bullwinkle TV series, and of course your ghost host from Disney's Haunted Mansion, can be heard in the Abominable Dr. Fives. We should talk a bit about how the police in this film are painted somewhat as bumblers, to be polite. They seem, for the most part, always showing up too late to save Fives' victims, or, as I mentioned with the death of Dr. Whitcomb, comically lending the madman a hand in the murder. All but Inspector Trout of Scotland Yard, that is. Thanks to his colleague, Sergeant Tom, he quickly connects the dots that they all worked at one point with Dr. Vesalius. And while at first, the man doesn't believe Trout that his life is in danger, as Fibe continues to murder his former colleagues, he is forced to see the truth of the threat. Inspector Trout gets his first piece of real evidence when Fibes accidentally leaves behind one of the amulets when he and Volnavia pay a call on Dr. Longstreet to enact the Plague of Blood, forcing him to give a blood transfusion. All of his blood in this case. Trout brings the amulet to the very jeweler who created it, and in this clip, you will hear more of the humor I mentioned that is laced throughout the film.
Oh, dear me, you've broken it.
What, sir?
It really is incredible, the amount of vandalism that there is around these days. I mean, I make something like this, a thing of beauty and a joy for everyone.
You did make it, sir?
Yes, of course I made it.
I wish to establish that, sir. Yes.
Certainly I did. That's my mark on the back there.
Good, thank you. Now, can you tell me a little bit about it, please, sir?
Yes, certainly. It's one of a very unusual set, this.
A set?
Yes.
There's more than one.
Of course there's more than one. It's a set.
Yes, well, how many in the set, sir?
Ten.
Ten?
Ten.
Yes, I see. Were they all the same?
Of course they weren't all the same. Do you want ten amulets looking exactly the same? Each of them had a different symbol.
I see. Well, who ordered the set?
It's a lady.
A woman, eh?
No. A lady. Yes, I remember the occasion well. She came in here, she gave me a set of working drawings. She paid half the cost there and then in cash, and the other half later when she returned for them. She was absolutely delighted with them, as well she might be. That's beautiful craftsmanship, you know. You don't often get craftsmanship like that nowadays. Could I take another look at it?
One more question, if I might. Yes? What did she look like?
Well, she was a tall, attractive, young lady. She didn't speak much, as I remember, but she was,
Smart, sir?
Fashionable.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, indeed, sir. You've been a great help.
Yes,
I'm sorry to take up so much of your valuable time.
Reasonably valuable, yes, it certainly is.
Good day, sir.
Good day, Inspector Pike.
Trout, sir?
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, by the way.
Sir?
That sign... that mark on the amulet, I don't know whether this is of any assistance, but it is, I believe, Hebrew.
Thank you very much, sir.
The jeweler, who is named Goldsmith in the film, is played by the late, great Aubrey Woods, who, listeners, you might know better as the Candyman from 1971's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Well, Inspector Trout, now knowing that the amulet has a Hebrew symbol upon it, asks a rabbi to inspect it, and learns that it's Hebrew for blood. The rabbi, of course, clues the inspector in on the 10 plagues and their meanings. But will it be enough to give Trout and Scotland Yard the upper hand to thwart Fibes before he's able to bring about the final plague? Well, listeners, you will just have to watch the movie for yourself to learn that answer. Now, before we start to wrap up the podcast, Projectionist, with information about the many talented people that made up the cast and crew, I've been watching you threading up the projector. I take it you have some choice drive-in ads for us to enjoy?
Indeed I do, Sage. While I was in Haddonfield on business, I was able to secure some rare drive-in advertisements from a friend to this radio broadcast, Philip Carey.
Evil will have its finest hour when the grave opens and Count Yorga returns to walk among the living.
Wouldn't it be something if vampires did exist?
They do. Not in the classical sense, of course, but there are those who thirst for blood. In fact, thrive on it.
Can the dead desire, can the lifeless lust, can a vampire fall in love and give a normal kiss?
Cynthia, what if I told you I possess the power to give you eternal life? Right now, this very moment. say you were marvelously mad.
Count Yorga returns from the land of the dead to seek a mate from among the living. This time it might be you.
One never knows when he might encounter some of the more unusual truths that exist in this world.
See the return of Count Yorga, the most unearthly love story ever filmed. Here is a vampire picture you can really get your teeth into. In color, rated GP.
They began in the water, dark, gliding shapes that violate every law of nature. They're not human, but they hunt human women. Not for killing, for mating. Humanoids from the deep, starring Doug McClure, Ann Turkel, and Vic Morrow. Humanoids from the deep. Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
Projectionist? I actually saw Humanoids from the Deep at the 62 Drive-In when it was originally released. Vincent Price had 197 acting credits to his name when he passed away in 1993. Most of those roles had a touch of horror or the bizarre to them. Some of his most notable films being 1953's The House of Wax, 1958's The Fly, and 1960's The House of Usher. My favorite film, however, is probably 1973's Theater of Blood, where he co-starred with the Avengers' Diana Rigg, a film we will have to certainly discuss on the podcast at some point. Besides acting, Vincent Price was a well-known lover of art and food, and in the 1970s he even had a cooking show entitled Cooking Price-Wise.
I had the pleasure of meeting Price once while screening 1964's Last Man on Earth. A very sweet and charming man. Hollywood is the poorer for his passing.
I certainly agree, my friend. Dr. Vesalius, as I mentioned, was portrayed by Joseph Cotten. He survived his co-star by a few months when he passed away in 1994. Probably best known for his work in Orson Welles' cinematic masterpiece, Citizen Kane. He also acted alongside Welles once again in Carol Reed's 1949 classic, The Third Man. Cotten would garner 132 acting credits in his lifetime, and it's been said that while on the set of Dr. Fibes, he found himself becoming upset due to his cues being read by a crew member. Remember, on film you didn't see Price talking. Cotten complained that he had to remember and deliver lines, while Vincent Price's were all going to be added later, to which it is claimed that Price responded, "Yes, but I still know them, Joe." To help ease the tension on the set, Price would try to get Cotten to break up by making humorous faces when shooting their scenes together. Inspector Trout was played by Peter Jeffrey, who passed away back in 1999. He obtained 157 acting credits to his name, with highlights including 1975's The Return of the Pink Panther, 1978's Midnight Express. He had two roles in the Doctor Who TV series, as a pilot in 1967's The Macra Terror, and Count Grindel in The Androids of Terra in 1978. Jeffrey also played the part of the Sultan in Terry Gilliam's wonderful 1988 fantasy film, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. Virginia North, who portrayed Volnavia, only has 6 acting credits to her name, but she also appeared in The Long Duel with Trevor Howard and Yul Brynner in 1967, and she was Olympia in 1969's On Her Majesty's Secret Service. The part of the ill-fated Dr. Longstreet was given to none other than British funny man Terry Thomas. Thomas is probably best known for his role as the voice of Sir Hiss in 1973's Walt Disney's Robin Hood. But with 115 roles at the time of his death in 1990, he appeared in all manner of films, like 1963's It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, or even in the 1972 sequel to the abominable Dr. Fibes, entitled Dr. Fibes Rises Again. It's worth noting that he is playing an entirely different character in that film. Director Robert Fust, well, I'm assuming that's Fust, I'm probably butchering his last name, I apologize. Well, he made a name for himself in the later 1960s. He directed 8 episodes of the BBC television series The Avengers, before taking a turn directing Timothy Dalton in 1970's Wuthering Heights. He also directed the 1972 sequel to Dr. Fibes, as well as 1975's The Devil's Reign, a cult classic where he directed the likes of Ernest Borgnine, Eddie Albert, William Shatner, Tom Skerritt, and John Travolta. Dr. Fibes was written by James Whitten and William Goldstein. Whitten and Goldstein both co-wrote the sequel, Dr. Fibes Rises Again, but Goldstein has gone on to write novels about the characters detailing their earlier history. Three books have been published so far in the series, Dr. Fibes, Dr. Fibes Rises Again, and Dr. Fibes, Volnavia's Secret.
There might be the information you seek on how Fibes and Volnavia met.
I would certainly imagine so, Projectionist. Now, I believe you have a clip of the film we'll be reviewing on our next show, right?
Indeed. This is a request from loyal listener Eric L., who left a response on the official Saturday Frights channel on the Facebooks.
You want to tell me what's wrong with everybody in this town?
I tell you a secret. No one leaves. People come, but no one leaves.
Why are you trying to kill us? What do we do to you?
I am here. I've been waiting for you.
Barbara?
Native dragon.
Friends, thank you all for listening to our Saturday Frights podcast. You can hop over to Retroist.com every Saturday night to check out Daniel 13's worthy offerings on Saturday Frights. You'll find a mix of everything from classic Twilight Zone episodes to anime versions of Frankenstein. His posts are always worthy of your viewing time. If you have questions or comments for Daniel, you can contact him at d13@gmail.com. That's d-t-h-1-r-t-e-3-n@gmail.com. The music you hear on the show was by Peachy. If you'd like to contact him, you may do so by sending him an email at peachy@retroist.com. I would also like to thank my co-host, The Projectionist, for his invaluable feedback. Where can your fans find you?
I am on the Facebook. Projectionist. Haunted Drive-In.
Saturday Frights has a Facebook page as well, so hop on over and give us a like when you can. We update the page a couple of times a day with retro horror goodies. The podcast is also available now on iTunes, so if you have a moment, we'd really appreciate it if you could drop by and give us a quick rating. I can be found almost daily on The Retroist. If you have any comments or suggestions for future films and TV shows that need to be covered, you can contact me at vicsage@retroist.com. Of course, a huge thanks goes out to The Retroist himself for not only allowing us to record in The Retroist Vault, but for being kind enough to host the podcast. If you have retro needs, and we all do, you just need to hop over to www.retroist.com for your daily retro fix. Until next time, the vault is sealed.
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye.